Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
There we go. I missed my cue there, didn't I? Hi, it's John. But you know, it's a long weekend and it takes a couple days to get back up to speed. Here's the deal. We were on Saturday, as we always are, from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Then had the long weekend. Rest of Saturday and Sunday and Monday. I hope you had a real nice weekend and a thoughtful Memorial Day, too. And I hope that you didn't just pick up your phone and rant on Twitter all weekend long. I hope you just had a thoughtful, reflective, barbecue-y. I don't want to talk about Donald Trump much today. We won't. We just don't have time. But this was another weekend where, you know, Americans are having fun and then trying to also reflect on the meaning of America, Americana, and Memorial Day. And there was the president fulminating about the election and Hillary and Barack and the investigation. And I think that what would behoove him and all of us, you know, it's one of those weekends where you need to turn off social media, which is a decision adults should make. So shame on me if it bothered me that much, right? But it would also be nice because the president, if you are on social media, sort of overtakes a nice holiday weekend. And you want to say, could you just give us a break? It would so behoove the president and the nation if, and it would be a funny picture, they had him in his suit and tie with the long red tie, you know, just he can still be Donald Trump, but then have him put a bib on, you know, like an apron and a chef's hat. And this would be as mocked a photo as anything that Meghan Markle's dad came up with. But go ahead and do it anyway. Have him in the Rose Garden, in front of a Weber grill made in America, and he's got the long spatula and he's about to turn a burger. If you know, and then happy Memorial Day from all of us at the White House. If they had just given us that, it would have so normalized and humanized and relaxed that topic. But no, we didn't get that. But we had a real nice weekend, a busy one, a productive one. Kim went to the Cubs game with her family Sunday night. Wow, that must have been hot. But she said, no, there was a cool breeze off the lake. This weekend was one of those weekends where it'd be 95 in Joliet and 85 along the lake. There really was a little bit of a cooling factor. But my sons came over yesterday, and Steve Bertrand, you'll love this. We broke out the outdoor table tennis facility yesterday. So Grant was over, and we were just sweating like pigs, but we were playing table tennis.
Yeah?
We were playing table tennis, and it was just a beautiful thing, you know, cooking some hamburgers on the grill, literally cooking hamburgers on the grill on National Hamburger Day and Memorial Day. So we did all of that and had a swell weekend. How about you? What was your highlight?
Well, you know, because you were listening, I was working.
On Monday?
Yesterday, yeah.
I missed a lot of the radio station yesterday, Steve. Mm. Violetta was working on Monday,
too. Some really great traffic reports. Some of my best work.
I suspect it was because folks really were traveling and probably needed that. You biked the drive, Violetta. I know
yes,
that.
Yes, I did. Not the whole thing. Pretty much oak to, I thought I was stopping at Belmont. So pushed myself to Irving.
I didn't know until today that they charge for bike the drive, like $65 or something.
Yeah, it's a big fundraiser.
Wow.
They make some money on that bad boy.
And they were out there checking wristbands.
Were they really?
They were kicking you off the drive if you didn't have it.
And Lakeshore Drive was as busy with bicycles as it would be with cars. It was unbelievable. I didn't bike the drive, but I drove by it. And I was like,
you should have picked me up from Irving. Take my bike.
I could have. It was brum, 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 brum. It was like the Indy 500, only they were doing 12 miles an hour.
Little kids with tassels were passing me up.
It was just this lovely American parade of people riding their bikes up and down Lakeshore Drive on Sunday. And it was expensive. There's no doubt about it. You could have ridden much of the morning, then you had to get off, and then the real big cars got out there.
I was there, too. I did the whole Instagram story with Stephanie.
So how many miles did you put in?
16.
Nice. V, how many did you put in? Exactly.
Collectively, I think, like, four. Like the whole day, because I stayed on my bike.
Why make the effort to bike the drive if you don't do what Elif did? I mean, if you're going to ride your bike, ride your bike.
Why would you judge me as to how far I want to take the drive? It was a beautiful, I did a couple hills.
The hills were really hard.
Well, yeah, I don't have gears on my bike.
Wait a minute. Lakeshore Drive runs along the lakefront. It is not a hilly road.
It's got some hills. It really is.
I promise.
Really?
Yes.
Would I be surprised to discover how the inclines wear on you?
It was hard. It got really difficult at some points.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, so that's why I stopped at Irving.
Shut my mouth. I thought that the lake, you know, is one kind of height, and then a lakeshore drive wouldn't be. Steve, did you know that there's a lot of arduous hills along Lake Michigan?
I'm trying to picture them.
So there's one at
Irving Park has a bit of an incline in Belmont
there. And then there's one like when you get off
North or south?
I can't remember that when you're biking it. Boy, it all seems the same.
Maybe that at that altitude you kind of lose your concentration. The air is so thin up there and you're unable to remember exactly.
And by Randolph. Yeah. Okay. Now
I'm mocking you. That's what I'm doing. By the way, speaking of going to ball games and just having fun. Here is Rudy Giuliani. Let's play this first. If you're Rudy Giuliani and it's your 74th birthday, you probably want to go to the Yankees game. I would. Here's what I would ask them to do. They evidently do a bunch of announcements. They actually do happy birthday announcements to some of the fans before Yankees games. I didn't know that. Nice touch. So they announced Rudy Giuliani's name.
The New York Yankees wish a very happy birthday.
Hearty Bronx cheer for the mayor, the former mayor.
On his birthday?
Yes, on his birthday.
I feel bad for him on his birthday. I love
Me
birthdays.
Too.
Do you guys know what the two most common nicknames are in the history of Major League Baseball and the history of the Chicago Cubs per se? Take a guess. This is not an easy one. Maybe Kevin knows. He's a sports whiz bang. What is the two most common names, nicknames in the history of baseball? It's the same for the Chicago Cubs. Now you're all Googling.
Like for a person?
For a baseball player. They call him Lefty Jones. Lefty would be the
nickname. Fox.
The Silver Fox. Both wrong answers.
Skip.
Skip is wrong. Nice, though. That would be maybe for a manager, but a player turned manager. Nope, not Skip.
Not for a guy who likes to travel alternatively.
He skipped to first base, in other words.
Or maybe he skipped first base.
They are Dutch and Docs. Dutch and Doc. And Dutch and Doc's is the name of the new restaurant at the Zachary Hotel, literally right in front of Addison
Clark.
Oh, is that
what it said? I couldn't read the cursive.
Yeah, that's what it is. They've got cursive there. They have right in front of the main entrance, Addison and Clark for Wrigley, in front of the red marquee. Directly across the street is a curved building, and that's the new restaurant that opened up a few days ago, literally late last week. So Brenda and I went over there. And what a cool place to eat. Really good food, at least our one trip there. I had a salad. Brenda had the tuna niçoise. And she had a rosé. I had a draft beer. And we were upstairs just overlooking the scene with the windows open. You think of all of the money that the Tribune left on the floor, on the table. On the table? Is that where you leave money when you don't collect it? That Hotel Zachary Complex with the five or six restaurants there is a moneymaker. Oh, my God. That thing is packed.
The new buildings really make the old buildings now seem out of place.
Yeah, but are you hating? Do you not like what they've done there?
No, I do. But I was in Wrigley, too, on Friday. And now all the local spots that you only ever had the option of going to look a little run down.
Well, you know, Brenda and I were talking about that because if you want to get a burger and a beer and a hot dog and go to a crowded, now noisy, jammed place, they got that. But what an opening there was in the market for a place that's just a little cleaner, nicer, newer. Like, shame on. Like, I said to Brenda, think of all of the business that is not at the Cubby Bear or wherever that's now in one of these properties along the Zachary Hotel front. That place is packed, and it has taken it's sucking all the money out of that market and sticking it right in there. But I'm like, hey, you guys have been there a lot longer than this hotel has been. You guys should have opened up some nicer restaurants or cleaned up your acts.
Yeah, but I'm thinking they're going to have to now that people have the option of something nicer.
I guess so. But I don't think they're going to change the... You'll still be able to get a beer and a burger in Wrigleyville. Meanwhile, people that want to spend about the same or a little more, depending on what you're ordering, have a newer place to go. They just did a real nice job over there. Okay, let's talk a little bit about this Roseanne Barr story. Roseanne's reboot has been canceled. Roseanne's reboot, Steve Bertrand just announced before the 1 o'clock WGN radio news that ABC, I'm reading right, Steve, has canceled season 2. They renewed it after the first episode of season 1. They said, we're going to do it again. Had huge ratings to start. They fell off a little bit, but they were still getting 10 million viewers. It was a giant success. And now because of what she said on Twitter in the last 72 hours, the show is canceled.
I think it was earlier today, wasn't it? Wasn't it a Tuesday tweet?
Yeah, actually it was.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on which one, because she really was on a rant.
Oh, okay.
She described Valerie Jarrett, the former advisor to President Obama. I don't know what inspired this. Maybe you do. It almost now doesn't matter. But Roseanne Barr went on Twitter and described Valerie Jarrett as someone who looks, quote, like the Muslim Brotherhood in Planet of the Apes had a baby. She later tweeted, it was a joke. Then she apologized more fully with, I apologize to Valerie Jarrett and to all Americans. I am truly sorry for making a bad joke about her politics and her looks. I should have known better. Forgive me. My joke was in bad taste. She also said, I apologize. I am now leaving Twitter. Wanda Sykes, the consulting producer on the show, quit Roseanne right afterwards via Twitter. Said, I'm out. Barr has also gone after Chelsea Clinton, suggesting that Chelsea was married to George Soros' nephew, and tweeted, Chelsea Soros Clinton. Chelsea Clinton is not married to George Soros' nephew. Realizing that, Roseanne Barr then tweeted, sorry to have tweeted incorrect information about you. Please forgive me! Exclamation point. By the way, George Soros is a Nazi who turned in his fellow Jews to be murdered in German concentration camps and stole their wealth. Were you aware of that? But we all make mistakes, right, Chelsea? Moments later, she tweeted, correction, Chelsea Clinton is not married to a Soros nephew. Her husband is the son of a corrupt senator. So sorry. She retweeted someone else who said, Soros is a vile criminal. The Clinton crime family is unhinged. Now they're stalking people on Twitter. Roseanne Barr has suggested in the past that 9/11 was an inside job. She suggested that Barack Obama's White House contrived the Boston Marathon bombing in an attempt to remove the Second Amendment. Those were her words. So she's just out there, right? I'm honestly surprised that based on that ignorant tweet about Valerie Jarrett, that they canceled her show. You went on to know what a real liberal is supposed to say about something like this. The liberal view is that you should not. And I hate to see ABC fall into the trap of the people that will now say, oh boy, there's the mainstream media circling their wagons around liberal view.
What do you mean the liberal view is that she would not be, they would not cancel the show?
My definition of liberal is somebody that's accepting, open, and tolerant. That's liberal.
Of racism?
I think that...
It's one thing to do the nutty, sort of the nutty Chelsea Clinton or the conspiracy or whatever.
I find that stuff is offensive.
Well, I find it stupid, but
sure.
But it's not comparing a African American woman to an ape.
Yeah, that's reprehensible. I don't want to sound like I'm defending that, Steve, but I just, as I said to you a little while ago, I hate to see people be super reactionary. I mean, cancel the show in a week. I don't know. Maybe this is the right time to do it. And besides, if you start to judge performers by their personal behavior, then you're going to have a complicated standard by which to keep or not keep shows.
But that's what we do with the whole Me Too movement.
Look, this is a business decision. If you're ABC...
Oh, I think if...
You know...
Think it is.
Really?
ABC... What do you think would have happened if they renewed season 2?
All hell would have broken loose.
Well, I don't know what that means. Do you think people would have watched?
People might have watched,
TV show?
I think they would have. I think there would have been
sponsor backlash.
Certainly, I think there would have been a lot of outcry over it. I think also that if ABC waited like you're suggesting. And I don't know what the right thing is either, but this is, you know, had they waited, then it would have looked like they succumbed to pressure rather than acted on their
own. Okay, so answer this. Should Jeffrey Tambor have work now? Should he be blackballed from TV shows?
No.
Should Kevin Spacey, should Matt Lauer ever get another chance? Should, what do we do with Morgan Freeman? Alec Baldwin, why? Boy, he sure got a couple of second chances.
Well, wait, okay, you're doing this. You're doing the very thing that you talk against. You're putting a lot of different crimes into one basket there.
Well, right? Intentionally, but go ahead.
Jeffrey Tambor's not accused of assaulting a woman, is he?
I don't know what he's accused of.
Okay, I mean, that's different than tweeting to millions of people a racist tweet. Now, as far as other men who did unwanted touching or sexually assaulted, yeah, they should continue to suffer for that.
Really? Should continue to suffer for that? And what should the penalty be? Should they not have work thereafter?
No, I think, I don't know. I don't want to. How did I become this guy?
But right. Someone's personality.
Roseanne called a woman an ape today.
I know that.
It has nothing to do with Matt Lauer.
My point, Steve, is that I'm surprised. I'm surprised. ABC knew what they had. They knew what they had when they hired her. So let's just say that. I'm not actually taking a position on did ABC do the right or wrong thing, maybe, as much as I am at this moment surprised. And were I in a position to make the decision, I don't think I would have pulled the plug on the show right away. Right? I think I would have waited a couple of days.
Okay, and you see my point that if they did that, I don't know if this was in their calculus or not, but then they could have been seeing it, having reacted to the outcry rather than reacted to the tweet.
To the tweet itself, yeah. Yeah, sticking their finger in the air when they should have just pulled the show. Okay, but then why? Okay, let me play for you a couple of Roseanne bites.
I'll say, can you see by the dawn's early light?
You remember that? That's Roseanne Barr singing the national anthem. I think the only thing I'm just cogitating in my head and maybe saying out loud before I should is that I want to judge the TV shows I want to watch and the movies I want to enjoy on their merit. If it's a good TV show, if it's a good movie, I'm going to watch that and enjoy it. And I'm not going to think about how Alec Baldwin performed in his personal life relative to his daughter and his wife. I think it's a funny show. I think he's a funny entertainer, and I want to watch that. And if Roseanne Barr is a horrible person, but you like her TV show, then I want you to be able to watch that TV show. It's more about that than, you know, should she have work or not. I mean, that's where I start on an issue like this. And then, you know, you have to score things and figure out what the right course of action is.
If you were to tweet out some of the things she tweeted out, do you think you would be fired here?
Probably, yeah.
So what's the difference?
I don't know. I'm just talking about this TV show. But for one tweet from a woman who herself is unhinged and has made fun of the flag and has said that 9/11 was an inside job. And then she does this stupid racist thing, right? But I do not want to go down the path of us scoring personal behavior and then deciding based on that, do we have that show or movie to watch or enjoy? I can put things in separate boxes. I think.
Okay, so let's go down the list. So pedophiles, would you be okay with pedophiles?
Well, that's
I'm just kidding you.
But that is exactly what ABC is setting itself up for now. That is exactly what ABC is setting itself up for right now. Remember after Morgan Freeman, I said last week that somewhere Al Franken is wishing he hadn't quit the Senate. I think that's the problem. When you start to compare and score things, it gets very complicated. And I felt like Al Franken's crime was not nearly as bad as some of the things that followed. Had he only known, he might have kept his seat, said me.
Right, but again, we talked about that there was a political thing too, and he was a Democrat, and
we didn't conclude that I was wrong about that, as I recall. That was just, I thought, an interesting observation.
I thought we concluded I was
Here's
right.
Here's a text that has just poured in. Hey, John, my friend was called into HR for saying monkey in the middle. She meant nothing racial, but she used that saying. John, Roseanne never respected anyone or any situation. It's about time she is taken down. See, that's what bothers me. I don't think Roseanne needs to be taken down. Roseanne is a person. She has views. People like her on TV. I don't know that we need to take Roseanne down. John, shame on you about Roseanne. You should know better. John, remember, ABC is owned by Disney. They have an image to maintain. John, you're wrong. Al Franken would still be a senator if that were true. What he did was far less than what Roseanne did. Okay. It's 1:30. We'll pause here. Steve's going to update you on WGN Radio News. Have you followed the Dow? My goodness. Details coming up. In our studio right now is Dr. David Barron. We'll talk to Jason Nathanson, who is not a doctor, in the next half hour.
He's a doctor of TV.
Dr. Barron is the medical director at Yellow Brick. Doctor, thanks for coming in and tolerating that lousy introduction. How are you?
It's fine. It's my pleasure to be here.
So I asked you to come in because last week we wanted to talk about this story and we never had a chance. But it's the story of that 30-year-old New York man who, I'm reading now from InsideEdition.com, right, was ordered to move out of his parents' home by a judge. His name is Michael Rotondo. And Mark and Christina Rotondo had been trying for months to evict their son. 30 years old, he lives in the house, he doesn't have a job. They say he won't pay rent, he won't contribute to the household, he's just there. Rotondo's parents took him to court on Tuesday of last week to evict him from their 1,920-square-foot home in upstate New York. The judge in the case sided with the parents. Rotondo called the ruling an attack. Rotondo's parents gave him $1,100 to find a new home, but they say that he spent the money on other things. He kind of blew it. So now the news story is, okay, now another talk show host in America has offered him cash, and a company, a restaurant, has offered him a job, and they said, we'll train you. But in the telling of the story, they've been using the phrase, this is an example of somebody who has failed to launch. Now, you're at Yellow Brick, and right, that's kind of the focus of what Yellow Brick is about, right?
That is exactly our focus.
What is failure to launch?
Well, we think of it as a kind of developmental delay or arrest. There's a developmental stage we refer to as emerging adulthood, generally between the ages of 18 and early 30s, where there are a few normative, ordinary developmental tasks people have that amount to becoming independent from your parents, from your family of origin.
Like what?
Like consolidating your sense of identity, learning to regulate yourself, mastering certain kinds of executive function skills, planning, organizing.
Being able to pay rent, pay utilities.
Being able to find work, go to school to find better work.
We're talking about kids that are college age or early 20s.
Just say, you know, the very end of high school and on into early to mid-20s.
Yeah. And most of us, without even thinking about it, develop through those stages.
Yeah, most people get to take that for granted. If all the factors kind of converge in your favor, then...
So give me an example of that. So what specifically? Like somebody, though, can't keep a job or they... Can't stay in school? What are we talking about?
Can't keep a job, can't stay in school, okay. Can't get into school.
Stop right there. Can't keep a job. Anybody can keep a job. Get up, put your socks on, go to work. The failure to launch kid, you say can't do that. What do you mean he can't do that?
Well, what we deal with at Yellow Brick tend to be potentially disabling mental illnesses. And people with these kinds of problems, although we don't focus on a particular diagnosis, there are any number of psychiatric problems and substance abuse problems that can converge to interfere with a person's ability to accomplish those tasks.
But in the case, say, of this hypothetical kid who can't keep a job, and you said, well, there may be an underlying medical problem, a mental illness issue.
Correct.
But how do I know if it's that? And by the way, really? The inability to keep a job is a mental illness now? Or is it just... Life is nice in the basement. Why would he want to leave? He just needs a kick in the ass. He doesn't need any more diagnosis than that.
Well, without commenting on the case in the news, I can say that we often run into families where they're just struggling to renegotiate their relationships. And often the emerging adult is, kind of the identified patient and also may have objections to moving forward in life. Compounded by psychiatric symptoms, compounded by substance abuse problems, as you say, medical problems.
Well, what comes first? The substance abuse, the alcohol abuse, or, you know, so is that them dealing with it and coping with it? Or, in fact, this isn't a failure to launch. This isn't an inability to get a job. This is you're abusing drugs and alcohol. That's why you don't have a life.
Well, what comes first is actually usually a genetic vulnerability to these kinds of problems. that then gets manifested when people are facing new developmental tasks that they haven't encountered before and don't really have the skills, and then are challenged emotionally in ways that disrupt them, leave them dysregulated, and unable to master these skills.
That's
and
so
tasks.
Interesting for you to say that. I have a friend who's a good friend whose son is a heroin addict, and they worry about him all of the time. And when they ask him, you know, why he fell into this, or if you ask the family what happened, they will point to little incidents in his life that you and I would say, oh, that was rough, but heroin? Mm-hmm. We don't get it. And I think maybe it's there for the grace of God go a lot of us, that for some people these trigger mechanisms are out there and they happen. And it doesn't make him a bad kid or a weak kid, but that's where they are.
Well, it's, you know, things that some people experience as, you know, another day, other people experience as traumatic.
And I'm sorry, I don't mean to belabor the point, but that's legitimate. That's real.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What do you make of this attitude of mind that doesn't understand that or appreciate that?
Well, partly it's that even our field hasn't understood it until fairly recently, that there are actually complicated factors, including genetic vulnerabilities, including biological vulnerabilities, including psychological vulnerabilities, all of which converge to really be the same
things. And I think that's what my friend and family are really going through. Otherwise, everything else is normal about their life, including their other children. But boy, this one kid has just struggled, and I feel really bad about him. But then how do I contrast that, though, with is there not also a population that's skating out there?
Skated by skating, you mean?
Mm-hmm. I mean that they are taking advantage of the situation. They are lazy, or they're just underachieving, and they do need a swift kick.
Well, it's kind of ordinary to want an adult life. And so I would say even that what you're referring to is skating, that, you know, oh, I can get away with it, so I will. My parents aren't going to set limits on me, so I'll just hang out here or do as little as possible. That actually in itself may be its own kind of developmental challenge.
Well, so how often is this associated with drugs and alcohol? Or are there some kids who literally can't seem to advance, launch, and they aren't abusing drugs or alcohol?
Yeah, you know, the numbers out in the population, I couldn't tell you with specificity, but at Yellow Brick, about two-thirds of the people we work with do have some kind of alcohol or drug problem.
About two-thirds?
Yeah, which means that a third don't.
Which you would suggest is a relatively large number.
It's really common among people with substance abuse to also have some kind of what's traditionally referred to as a psychiatric disorder, and vice versa.
Well, so I'm not thinking, let's not talk about this young man in the news that you and I don't know, or even my friend, but I'm not thinking of these people as having psychiatric illnesses. That is, they're not bipolar, they're not manic depressive.
Well, some of them are.
Some of them are, though.
Yeah.
Some of them are, some of them aren't. Is that what you're
saying?
That's
correct.
And you at Yellow Brick treat all of these people?
That's correct, yeah.
Because, so in other words, which is interesting to me, because I would think Yellow Brick would say, okay, we're drug and alcohol, or we treat psychiatric disorders like manic depression. The result of either of those may be that you failed the launch. You'll take the failure to launch and say, we'll bring them both under the tent.
No, we're really treating a developmental stage rather than specific diagnoses. Within that developmental stage, just about everything people present us with diagnostically, we work with. But we treat the individuals, not the disorders.
Which is so interesting to me, because I just think those would fall under such different tents. For instance, autism, or young people that are somewhere on that spectrum, they have trouble staying in school or interacting or keeping jobs. We're getting better at understanding how to employ them and what great employees they can be, by the way.
True.
But would you put them into the Yellow Brick as well?
We have and have had people in our program who are on the autistic spectrum. We've had people with schizophrenia. We have people with what are traditionally referred to as personality disorders.
And do any of the families say, no, wait a minute, but my kid's autistic. He's not an alcoholic, or he's not manic depressive. Present's not the right word, but I don't think that he should be in that population.
You know, we occasionally run into that, but we have a very thorough, extensive, and lengthy assessment process. We bring people in for 3 full days. And by the end of that, usually families are beginning to understand how we approach things, and that it's not specifically based on a diagnosis.
So then at Yellow Brick, would they all get the same kind of they would be in the same therapy session, all talking about how are we going to keep our job or stay in school?
Well, they're talking about how are we going to move forward, whatever that means for that person. And while they all have the same services available to them, and many of them are in the same groups, we tailor treatment to each individual such that they're not all getting exactly the same treatment all the time.
I know this about alcoholics and drug addicts. They won't get better if they don't want to. Is the same true for failure to launch?
I would slightly alter that phrase. You know, at the end of our assessment, I'm always asking people, you know, about entering treatment, because that's the next step that we usually recommend. And I don't ask them if they want to. I ask them if they're willing to. It's a very different thing, because most people, if they're going to enter into a process where they have to do difficult things, face painful experiences, don't want to, but they might be willing to for a greater goal, like having their own adult life.
Hmm. What's the answer to that question usually?
It's more often yes than no.
The parents are saying yes, that's for sure.
Far more often, and yeah, somewhat more often than their sons and daughters, yes.
I need to pause. We've got some calls. Dr. David Barron is here. He's the medical director of Yellow Brick. I've been meaning to bring some of those folks from Yellow Brick on the show for a while, and then when this story about Michael Rotondo, the 30-year-old evicted from his parents' home in New York, was in the news, I thought, well, that's an interesting launching point, if you will, for this conversation, even though he may or may not be an example of what we're talking about. You don't know him. You wouldn't diagnose him sitting here.
Of course not.
But they use the expression failure to launch, and so I thought, okay, let's have this conversation. My number is 312-981-7200, and again, our guest is from Yellow Brick. Yellow Brick Program.com is the website if you want to reach out to them. I'm just fascinated by the topic and saddened and frustrated for these families. It's just a couple of minutes in our studio from that place we talk about sometimes on the radio, Yellow Brick. Go to yellowbrickprogram.com is Dr. David Barron. He's the medical director there. We're talking about the concept of failure to launch, and Kevin had a question. You're on WGN. Kevin, what can we do for you?
Well, I was just, you know, listening to your conversation, and, you know, one of the things that I always question when you hear about these types of things is, you know, what role do the parents play in this? I mean, you know, this gentleman in New York lived in his parents' house for 8 years, okay? What took them so long to get to this point? So I guess I question, you know, all the parents who are helicopter parents who want to do everything they can for little Johnny and Sally. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, like when my kids were growing up, the fact is that the biggest issues that I had were not with my kids' friends, but with their parents, because they were the ones who were coddling them and gave them everything that they wanted without question.
Yeah. And we're all nodding our heads in the studio. Hold on. Let him jump in there. Go ahead. What do you think about that?
Well, parents, of course, are part of a family system with their son or daughter. And one thing I've learned after doing this for a number of years is that blame, whether it's on the emerging adult, on the mom, on the dad, on someone else in the family, ends up generally being the end of a conversation rather than the beginning. We do want to help people understand what role they're playing. If they're doing things that are enabling their son or daughter to stay in place and not move forward, we try to help them understand that. We offer a lot of support for parents and families to aid in that process.
But maybe we shouldn't be treating the kids. We should be treating the family.
Well, we're treating kids who genuinely need treatment, and family treatment often is part of that.
Okay, so parents don't create this by their helicopter parenting?
I think that there is, it can oversimplify things, at least, again, in the sector where I'm working and the group of people I work with, it would probably oversimplify it to say it's all the parents' fault.
That's a really good call. Kevin, thank you for joining us. This texter from 630 says, my 20-year-old son suffers from depression and ADHD, but he signs up for school, he pays, and then he stops going and he fails. He's now talking about the military. You think he can handle the military? Maybe the military will fix him.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would be not ethical for me to comment on a particular person, but I can say that people who are struggling in this way often are kind of scrambling around looking for what's going to work better for me. Of course, the military is a good solution for some individuals, and it isn't for others, and for yet others, it might be a terrible idea. But it is, I think what I take from the question is there are people who kind of face this particular stage of life, and they realize that they can't quite figure out what to do given the challenges
Well, I shouldn't be giving medical advice either, but it seems to me like the United States military is not counseling. It's not therapy.
It certainly is not. No, that it is not. It is a good fit for some people and occasionally for people who have been struggling in certain ways, but not for everybody and not for anyone with a serious mental illness.
Dr. David Barron is the medical director at Yellow Brick. All right. I'm fascinated. I'm a little sad. Are you?
Me too.
Well, should we be encouraged about something in this field? Maybe that we're talking about it is helpful.
The talking about it, the stigma has faded away a lot in the course of my career, which is around 30 years. Also, I think there's a lot to be hopeful in terms of what we're learning about the mind, the brain, the fact that they're the same thing. We use a lot of really interesting neuroscience technology in both in our assessment and in treatment.
That is an interesting point. I mean, so this is the thing. What do you think they do at Yellow Brick? Do they give them drugs? Do they sit in couches and talk? I suppose you do some of that. You prescribe drugs. You have therapy.
We do all of that in an individualized way. Pharmacologic therapy is informed by genetic testing. We do genetic testing on 100% of our patients.
Think about that, genetic testing. And also brain games, like training the mind, learning to see what you're experiencing, and then how can I mentally process and get over that. What a concept.
We do something called a brain gym. They're evidence-based cognitive exercises done in front of a computer facilitated by staff where people work on improving their cognitive capacities.
I was watching that, and I don't think I've ever seen anything so space-age and yet simple and clever in my life. So good luck to you guys. Good luck to your patients and their families in the failure to launch category. It's nice to meet you. Thanks for coming into our studio. The story to start the show was Roseanne Barr losing her TV show. You know, the reboot?
What's up, deplorable?
Aunt Jackie thinks every girl should grow up and be president, even if they're a liar, liar, pantsuit on fire.
Get it? So the show had some political digs. It wasn't planning on being a political show all the time, but obviously it set the tone. And what do you know, Roseanne Connor and Roseanne Barr had the same politics. And now, because of Roseanne Barr's racist tweet about Valerie Jarrett, the show has been canceled. On a phone line is Jason Nathanson, the entertainment reporter for ABC, who has what to say about this. Jason, when you first saw that tweet, did you think, slam dunk, the show's canceled?
No, not at all. I've seen Roseanne tweet many, many things over the past several years that have been offensive to a lot of people, that have caused a lot of Twitter to become upset. And you just never know where the line is these days. I mean, there's a lot of things that I think President Trump or people have thought President Trump have tweeted, which would be, okay, that's the one. That's the one that's going to go over the line with Roseanne as well, with many people. You know, you just never know where the line is these days. So the fact that, that it became such an issue so fast, I thought was interesting. The fact that ABC fired and canceled her show so quickly, didn't see that coming.
I wonder how many people lose a job as a result of this. We're all talking about Roseanne. You know, ABC also canceled The Chew, which Bill and Wendy were talking about today. It's a popular show at my house as well, and everybody was focusing on the host, actually on The Chew. They also went back to the staff. But I think, what a shame that many other people now don't have work, you know?
Yeah, that's true. When it comes to something like The Chew, shows get canceled all the time. That's the nature of the business. If you go into it, you know that that's going to happen. I mean, it's always sad when it does happen, and yeah, people are out of jobs, but you're constantly finding new jobs because in television, nothing runs. I mean, if you're lucky, you get 10 years on a show. But that's not the norm at all. Here on Roseanne, you had it's a little different because you had a lot of people who thought they had a season two in the bag. You had crew members, hairstylists, makeup people, set dressers, things like that, who, it's possible I'm a young family man who worked on that show and thought, I got a season two in the bag. I'm going to buy a house here in Los Angeles because I know I have that income coming. That's the real shame in something like this.
So she tweets this thing about, she was also talking about Chelsea Clinton. She was on a bit of a Twitter rant in the last 24, 48 hours, but it was the Valerie Jarrett thing that did her in?
the last 10 years she's been on a Twitter rant. This has literally been a problem for a long time that ABC did not want to address. And a year ago, at the Television Critics Association summer press tour, President Channing Dungey, who was the one who fired Roseanne today, she was asked on stage, look, Roseanne tweets a lot, and a lot of it is crazy conspiracy theories, and a lot of it's unhinged. Is that something that concerns you? And Channing Dungey said, I just try to worry about the things that I can control. So this is something we knew a year ago could be a problem. Did we know it would lead to her being fired and losing her show, a show which was the number one show on ABC, the number one comedy on television, and the number three show overall on TV? I don't think we saw that coming, but we knew it would be a problem.
Then why did they fire her?
They fired her because they knew that they were going to get pushback from advertisers. The one thing networks fear more than anything else is an advertiser boycott. This is definitely the kind of thing that was going to lead to one. We saw so quickly, within a matter of an hour or so after the tweet, how much pushback there was. Roseanne herself apologized for it and deleted it, which is something she almost never does, at least give an apology for something like that. And it became very clear that advertisers were about to jump on board. Now, many people have said that it's possible that ABC was just looking for a reason to fire Roseanne, that it was sick of being in bed with her and her politics and the stuff that she was saying. That they could have been hypersensitive and hyper-aware, it's possible. But whatever the case, they moved very quickly.
Less than a minute left. Did they not, though, renew the show for a second season after the first episode of the first season?
Yeah, it was because of the ratings and everything. It was brought back very, very quickly because they had a hit on their hands. And
sure.
That they want more than anything else. ABC doesn't have a lot of hits. It's got that and The Good Doctor and, you know, Grey's Anatomy.
That tweet and the firing are entities unto themselves. This isn't about Donald Trump. This isn't about national politics per se, is it?
No, I don't think so at all. I think it's about racism more than anything else. If you look at it, Channing Dungey is the first African-American woman head of a network. And I'm not saying that she's more sensitive to things like that than anybody else, but she's the one who did the firing here. And I have to imagine that she was probably personally offended by this.
Jason Nathanson. It's always a pleasure, Jason. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Sure, thanks.
So of all the great things that we all did this weekend, chores and going to the ball games and cooking out and thinking about America on Memorial Day and the folks who have sacrificed so much, there is a lot of sports going on this weekend. Kevin, I think someday when the White Sox are really good, we're going to look back at the fifth inning of yesterday's White Sox game and go, remember when?
You know, I've had a few of those moments this season, though, John, where I've said the exact same thing.
It was so bad.
I've looked at somebody in the press box and say, you know, this will be the moment where we say they bottom out. You know, whether it was them blowing that the home opener, whether it was against the Pirates a few weeks ago when they had a 2 or 3 run lead going in the ninth, and they blew that one.
No lead is safe.
No,
with this
it's
team.
Not. And we said, you know what, before, early on in the season, I said, you know what's going to happen? Sox fans are going to go nuts because what's going to happen is there are some decent bats on this team and some young talent. There's going to be a lot of situations where they do blow games late because of the bullpen. And they, you know, the last thing teams are going to do is invest into the bullpen. A lot of times it's starters who can't make it as starters. Then they just get placed in the bullpen, or then you start going to sign these top relievers. At this point, the bullpen is the least of concerns for the White Sox, and it showed.
It's sort of like the mental. I don't know what it is. But like in that fifth inning of the White Sox game on Monday,
yesterday,
these were not all counted errors, but either errors or bad plays by the shortstop and the first baseman, by the right fielder, by the catcher, ball through the legs of the second baseman. And was there an error in left? I'm just trying to think of all of the things that went wrong. Put it this way. If you were on the field for the White Sox in the fifth inning and you didn't make an error, please take one step forward because everybody else made a boo-boo in that in that game, in that inning.
If you didn't officially get charged with an error, you had a hand in a play because there was a pop-up where nobody was calling for it and it was a mess. Okada booted one, so not good.
But Elif, what is the definition? I was going to use the word nader, but I wasn't sure if that was too fancy a word because I don't know what it means. Elif, what does nader mean?
Nadir, according to Google Dictionary, noun, the lowest point in the fortunes of a person or organization.
That's what it was.
Yeah, that's what it was.
That was the Nadir of this reboot.
Since baseball's all stats, this whole season we should keep track of the Nadirs because it's like, I've had, this is about three Nadirs now for me.
I don't think you can have more than one Nadir. I think a Nadir
is... Right, well, the Nadirs are topping each other.
I got a better Nadir for you. LeBron James is in his eighth consecutive NBA championship series.
Yeah, you know when you were growing up as a kid, there was always somebody on the playground when you were playing basketball or whatever sport it may have been, and they somehow went through puberty before everyone and just bullied everyone. You can never beat that kid, right? Whoever had that kid on their team, he was the bully. He was throwing the ball down. In Sunday's Game 7, that's what LeBron James looked like against the best basketball players in the world. He basically single-handedly won that game for the Cavs. It was impressive. He's averaging 33 points.
What's your favorite thing LeBron does in the playoffs? What's his signature thing?
I love when he gets to the rim and just kind of bulldozes his way through. I think he should do that even more than he does, and he does it quite often. But just
he can hit the three,
LeBron,
though.
LeBron, nobody is stopping you. You are a freight train.
Yeah. I like the... where he runs the length of the court and blocks a shot.
Yeah, because he has the timing.
Oh, no,
you can tell.
You don't. He's taking those little chop steps.
Yep. He's just timing it up. He's teeing it up.
He's going to jump on top of the rim. Right. His head will be touching the backboard.
Yep.
And you are going to have a collision with this train.
Yep.
What fun that is.
Yeah. Now it's a matter of how many games are they going to win in the finals or not win. And I think I'm looking at a gentleman's sweep from the Warriors. Five games. There's no chance Cleveland's beating Golden State. That's my problem with the NBA. I mean, there's no chance
Cleveland is going to win.
Oh God!
We just said all of these things about LeBron. There's no chance.
No. Unless there's a major injury to the Warriors.
Well,
that series is over. I think
four games.
I'll go five.
Really? Well, but LeBron, not even six.
LeBron's good enough to will them to one victory.
Yeah. Why? Because Durant is so good, or Steph is back, or it's the four-headed monster, isn't it?
I mean, it's one of the most stacked teams in the history of the NBA.
Yeah,
unfortunately, I have thoughts on the NBA.
Meaning they should diversify
Kevin Durant's
the talent
on the Warriors because he couldn't beat the Warriors, so he signed with them in free agency. How pathetic is that? Let's go back to the playground talk. That's like being the third grader. The third graders play the fourth graders, and the third graders just can't beat the fourth graders. So some kid on the third grade team goes, "Guys, sorry, I'm going with the fourth graders. I'm tired of all this losing." It's pathetic. Are you kidding me? You can't beat them, so you join them?
That's pathetic. You have one career. By the luck of the draw,
We're all going to remember what Durant did.
And by the luck of the draw, you're in Oklahoma City, and you're thinking, I could live and die here. Fine. But I'm the most competitive kind of human being.
So I'm going to just join the best team.
So
it's like LeBron leaving to go to Miami. That rubbed people the wrong way then. It still rubs people the wrong
way. Well, they seem to have gotten over it in Cleveland, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
I think that if you want to go play on the best team and be a role player, you know, you're maybe the third option. You sure aren't the first. And you win a championship and you create one of the greatest teams ever. I'm sorry, what is the problem again now? What did he do
He
wrong?
Did it willingly. He cut the corner. It's not like he was traded to them. He said, you know what, guys? You guys are the best team. I'm going to come join you and win.
That team's fun to watch.
You think Mike...
Fun to watch.
It is fun to watch, but they're going to win, and we all know that. The NBA is the most predictable league out there.
Joe Brand asked us on Saturday. He said, who wins, Brad Stevens or LeBron James? Did you think the Celtics... What was your guess on Game 7, Celtics-Cavaliers?
Oh, Cavaliers, yeah, because of LeBron.
Talk to me about Ovechkin versus the Golden Knights. What's the name of this Las Vegas hockey team?
You got it, the Vegas Golden Knights. You know, I'm flipping back and forth between the games yesterday, and I'm like, man... The game one of the Stanley Cup final was some of the most entertaining sport in general, not
Ten
just
goals.
Like I've watched in a while. It was high intensity. Yeah. It was high action. That series is going to be outstanding. I highly recommend catching as much of that if you can.
And should we
can.
Be rooting for the for Washington just for Ovechkin?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are kind of hoping for that. But the Golden Knights, man, that's one of the stories of the year so far.
Why?
Because they're an expansion team.
Yeah, they did not exist a year ago.
They did not exist a year ago, and they're in the championship. Now, they did the way the expansion rules basically changed a little bit compared to the last time the NHL expansion really favored the Vegas Golden Knights. But still, it's an expansion team. Nobody anticipated this.
More sports with Kevin coming up after the news. Here's the new ABC reboot, which suddenly has currency.
What did they tweet this time?
I know. What did you tweet, Richard Roper? What did you say?
I don't know. I'll leave this all up to Amy. I'm just here to help.
Amy Guth is in the studio, too. Yeah. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
So what are you two campers talking about?
Well, I think we got some Roseanne to discuss for sure.
Yeah, there's an opening for a sitcom. A lot of people don't know that Amy and I were actually on a show called Who's the Boss's Boss? And only ran for a half an episode in 95.
It was a quarter episode, technically.
Then we walked.
What's your gut check? Did they make the right decision?
They did. They absolutely
did. Boom, right now, go.
They did. And one thing we want to talk about as well is, you know, in addition to being racist and delusional, I think, you know, we can't lose sight of the fact that she just cost about 200 people their jobs, including most of those people. You know, people say, oh, wow, John Goodman. I'm talking about all those behind-the-scenes technicians and crew members who work so hard on that show.
Yeah. I think you're right. What else are you doing today?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about Starbucks, because that's today's their bias training day, so we're going to talk about that a bit. We're going to check in with Skilling, of course, because we got some hot weather ahead. And we're going to check in with the Chicago Fire Department after the diver who was lost overnight. We're going to check in about that and a fund that's been set up. So we're going to talk with some folks about that.
I'm looking forward to it. Have a real good show, you guys.
Thanks very much.